Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. So hi guys, welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. I have my good friend Hannah Babarskis. Did I say it right?
I said it perfectly.
Babarskis.
Well, if you're American, Babarskis. Yeah.
Yeah. You were recently in Australia.
I was in Melbourne. Yeah. What a cool city. It kind of reminds me of like a Portland, Seattle feel, maybe a little San Francisco feel.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the vibe that Melbourne was giving me.
Yeah.
A lot of culture. It's a cool city. Great coffee.
Great coffee.
I mean, it was like, I feel like I had an IV plugged into my arm.
I know. We love our coffee.
Espressos and flat whites.
It's so fun. Well, I'm excited that you're on the podcast. So guys, Hannah is a pastor at a ministry school here in Redding, California.
Yes.
And I wanted to have you on today because not only because you're awesome and amazing, but because you have gone on this great kind of wellness and health kind of journey. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to chat to you about that. But because I have a bit of an ADHD brain, we're probably going to pop around with many things today. But
we
first,
love a rabbit trail.
We love a rabbit trail for sure.
Follow the rabbit.
Yeah, pretty much. But let's give our audience like a bit of context for who you are. Like, I know you grew up as a missionary kid, right? So yeah, like tell us just a bit about who you are.
Yeah. So I grew up at the time in the 90s, it was called Irian Jaya, which is just north of Australia.
Really?
Yeah. So we would get on our giant satellite in the 90s. You'd have like a giant satellite in your backyard if you wanted satellite TV. And we would get an Australian channel.
Really?
I cannot even remember which one it was, but I would watch Australian TV in my childhood. But my dad was a bush pilot. So he would be flying into indigenous places and with tribes and work with tribes. And a lot of that involves like medical missions, medical care, Bible translation. It was really, really cool childhood. Actually, I think that was probably a very defining time for me because, you know, when you're a kid, those formative years define you more than you realize when you're older.
They really do. Yeah.
But I mean, growing up in the tropics, growing up in the jungle and by the ocean, I think became very ingrained into me as a kid. Mm. And you're in a lot of silence and solitude in the jungle, and you're outside all the time. We didn't even have air conditioning.
Wow.
We had one room with an air conditioner, and we're just living in nature, really.
Is this like Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, same island.
Okay.
So the island looks like a dinosaur. It looks like a bird a little bit. It has like a bird head with a beak.
Yeah.
And one side of the island, the east side is Papua New Guinea. The west side is called West Papua now, but it's owned by Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
But very similar.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the indigenous tribes are different, like different dialects, different languages, but similar roots. It's very, very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be like, go there if you want an adventure. You
know? Yeah. And how many years were you there?
I was there almost a decade. So I was born and then we moved immediately.
Okay. Born in America.
Basically immediately after that. Yeah. Born in America, born in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And because my parents are from the city.
Yeah.
And then, we came back 2000. So right when Y2K hit.
Okay.
And on the airplane, I'll never forget this. On the airplane, I was hearing all these songs by Backstreet Boys, NSYNC.
Had you not heard of them?
A Genie in a Bottle.
Oh, Genie with in a Bottle.
Christina. Yeah,
Christina. Extina.
Yeah, Extina.
Yeah.
And Mambo Number 5. One, two, three, four, five.
Oh,
I'll start singing that right now. But
yeah.
I'll just never forget it because it was like all these films were on TV because we didn't get like recent movies.
Yeah.
So Notting Hill was playing. I'll never forget that. You know that.
Yeah. Love that. Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts.
I'll never forget it. I'll just never forget the flight over because it was all this culture that I missed out on. So I still love the 90s. Like I'm still catching up, I feel like, on 90s history. And I'm a little bit obsessed with it because we were so isolated.
Yeah. Wow.
An island.
Wow. Did you find that disorientating? Like, because I know I talk to a lot of like missionary kids. Mm-hmm. There can be this thing of belonging a little bit.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Where do fitting in.
Yeah, they call that like third cultured kids. Yes. And there's a little bit of a thing that happens that it's like, I don't feel American, but I also don't feel like the country I grew up in. Yeah. Who am I? Where do I belong?
Yeah.
So actually a lot of my healing journey kind of revolved around, who am I and where do I belong?
Wow. Wow.
Like, that was a huge question for me. Like, yeah. It's one of those, I think all of us are looking for identity.
Sure.
All of us are like, yeah, what's my identity? What's my life purpose?
Right.
But when we have so much culture influence us during that time.
Yeah.
That I had so many different cultures coming at me.
Yeah.
And then honestly, isolation. When you're a missionary pilot, people are coming and going all the time. Different missionaries are coming in and out.
Mm.
And I went to a one-room schoolhouse with another missionary teacher. There was one time where it was just me, my brother, another kid, and two other kids. Like, a brother and, like, it was just the four of us. So when you're really isolated, the feeling of where is home and where is belonging is pretty strong.
Yeah, it's kind of a tension because I can imagine growing up as a missionary kid, like, having that wide open sense of adventure.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. Very carefree.
Yeah.
Which you're running around barefoot. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're running around barefoot, climbing trees. Yeah. Like,
yeah, yeah.
We had this cat, my brother and I at Christmas were reliving this really funny story of this cat that we got, this little kitten. And our other missionary family live like across the street or whatever from us, like however many yards. But
yeah.
And when it's a missionary base, they're pilots. So we lived like on next to the airstrip. Mm. It's like almost like a military base.
Yeah.
But like very small, and the planes are right there outside the house. So we have this cat. We're obsessed with this black cat. And then in the morning, the kids are still sleeping. My mom gets a phone call from our neighbors, and she's like, guys, we have bad news. The cat named Satchmo is dead outside our house.
Oh no.
We did this whole funeral for the cat.
Oh my gosh.
That involved putting it in a trash bag. And we would have this giant trash pit, kind of a little bit in the woods. Like,
yeah.
And it's not the woods, it's the jungle. So
yeah.
It was in the woods. And we like walk the cat out solemnly in this like black little like trash bag.
Yeah.
Throw him in the trash pit. Said a little prayer.
Like, oh my gosh.
Such interesting.
Yeah.
Just an interesting life.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like so growing up, and then you come back to America, and then what was life like for you?
I mean, it was a bit of a shocker because I went from like hot, humid weather to having to wear socks.
Yeah.
And being in the winter. It was like January, November 99 to January, and moved to more rural Illinois.
Okay.
So smaller farm town. So you go from having the beach across the street to just like freezing cold.
Yeah.
Freezing cold.
Yeah.
And more of a scheduled and even religious, very, very religious environment. So the school my brother and I got put into was very conservative, very religious.
Yeah.
So all these rules, like don't put your feet up on the desk. Like as a missionary kid, you're not thinking like, I was like a wild child.
Yeah.
We're just doing whatever we want.
Yeah.
In class, you're like lying on the ground if you want.
Yeah.
But, it was the rules and the strictness was so interesting. And then the mindset, even at a younger age, because I was about to hit middle school.
Yeah.
At a younger age, I was like, man, the world is so big I'm not relating with everyone around me.
Yeah. That's so hard to, like, it's a big question for a kid.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And so with religion, a lot of people can either go, I'm going to fully rebel.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to really conform and try and be a good girl.
Oh, yeah.
Or did you kind of oscillate between two?
I struggled between the two because I think my internal wanted to rebel.
Yeah.
But I had such a moral compass inside of me that I didn't you know, I actually personally just didn't want to break rules for the sake of breaking rules.
Yeah.
But I would stand up if something was unjust.
Yeah.
And that did get me in trouble. Got me in trouble with teachers and had me sent to the principal's office if I felt something was unjust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say that. But I definitely tried to be a really good kid. And my parents are great. I have really great parents. They were influenced by religion, and they'll admit that.
Yeah.
But so they're a lot more lenient. I mean, a lot of my friends growing up, they're not Christians anymore, and I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Right.
I get it. Nobody wants to think God is like
mean and
slapping.
Punishing. Yes. And controlling.
And punishment driven.
Yes.
It's horrible. It's horrible. It's pretty horrific, actually, to be driven by punishment.
Yeah.
And always have a sense of a guilty conscience.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost kind of traumatizing to always have a feeling of guilt. It wasn't until I went to therapy when I was 21, I started going to therapy.
Yeah.
And I was living in California and in school, and I started going to a therapist, and she was able to pull that out of me. And she went, "Do you always live with a sense of guilt inside?" And I said, absolutely. It's always balled up in me. She's like, well, that is mixed with anxiety.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, the two go together. She's like, you know that that's actually not normal to live like that.
Wow.
That doesn't need to be your normal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
That was
like revolutionary.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't have to live with guilt and shame and like I'm walking on eggshells or doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I don't have to live like that.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally relate to that, like feeling like, yeah, like you're never enough or not doing enough and you could have done something better.
Yes.
Constantly, like you should have thought about that and like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if any mistake is ever made, you just put it on your shoulders.
Yes.
This is my fault. Everything is my fault.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if you didn't grow up in religion, a lot of us live with this black and white mentality of right and wrong. And
yeah.
And creating punishment. A checklist that is sometimes too high for us to even meet.
Yeah.
And a bar that is too high.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you mentioned like, yeah, that view of God, which is like, of course, like why would someone want to go to church and serve a God that is like that?
That just punishes.
Yeah, punishes. You're in trouble all the time.
Well, it's not really working.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean, you see it in church and like
the
millennial generation isn't having it.
We're not. Yeah, so true.
Sorry, evangelicals.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. And so how has your, I love hearing how people's view of God changes.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me a bit about, like, it sounds like that was a key moment in therapy where you got invited into another way of living.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shifted a mindset.
Yeah. So how has your relationship to God shifted or your view of God shifted?
Yeah. I think it took a little bit for me to view God as love.
Yeah.
I knew he was because the Bible tells me so. Like you hear that, but then your lived reality is not saying that God is love.
Yeah.
Because God is punishing me. God is condemning me.
Yeah.
But which is so weird to read that and then experience something opposite of that.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people don't like the Christian God because they think it's hypocritical.
Right.
And I think it started to really shift for me when I think I was at a crossroads. When I hit college, you leave your family.
Yeah.
You know, you hit 18, 19, 20. All right, your adulthood, here we go. What is actually going to be my life separate from my family?
Yeah.
God bless my legacy. God bless my family, parents. All of us have different backgrounds. But who am I going to be?
Mm.
And am I going to do I want to believe in God?
Mm.
And am I going to make this my own? Those were the questions I was asking.
Yeah.
And I was at a private Christian school.
Yeah.
But still, those are the questions you're asking. You're
for
like,
sure. Okay,
I'm hitting my 20s. What do I believe? What do I want out of life?
Yeah.
And
also, what's actually real?
Yes.
Like, is this real?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're reading the Bible and I'm like, you know, this thing is kind of wild.
Yeah.
When I was reading the Bible.
Yeah.
Especially like the miracles and the healings that Jesus did. I'm like, I wasn't in churches where that was happening, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, as I'm reading it on my own, I'm like, this thing is pretty wild. So I actually remember having I had a hard time in college. I definitely had spouts of what I would say was depression.
Yeah.
And obviously I lived with anxiety, which I wasn't aware of. I just didn't know. You don't know until someone tells you.
Yeah. You're like, you don't know until you know. Peace?
Yeah, exactly.
All the time?
Peace.
What?
Yeah. And it's, I think, when I really started going to therapy. But what I would do is I would take my therapy skills, because she was actually teaching me how to process my emotions and my feelings. And I didn't have that in my upbringing.
Yeah.
And I went, okay, well, I'm processing my emotions and feelings. I wonder if I can do that with God.
Mm.
So I would sit in my car. I would get in this practice of getting in my vehicle, because it's LA, so it's kind of busy. And I'd find like an empty parking lot somewhere, or I'd go over to the beach. So I'd like drive over to Newport Beach, and I'd try to get somewhere along the beach that wasn't busy, or at sunset, or even at nighttime. Hopefully, if there was a clear sky and no pollution, then you could see the stars.
Yeah.
So I'd set myself up in a way where I'd be a bit in silence and solitude.
Yeah.
And I would just start using my therapy tools. And I felt a little crazy doing this at first. Genuinely, I thought I was a little nuts.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to pretend like God is a therapist.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna...
Well, he's the great counselor.
Exactly. That's what That's it said right. in the Bible. Yeah. So I said, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take him on his word on that
one. Yeah.
So I just sat, and it felt like I was talking to nothing. But at that point, it was also helping me use the skills I'd learned to process how my heart felt.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, God, I feel like this, and I feel like this, and I have this pain and that pain, and this is going on. So I would just talk out loud.
Yeah.
And what was crazy is, as I would do that and just process my emotions, I began to have these very tangible physical experiences from the top of my head to the tips of my feet, where it was like peace would just flood my body from head to toe. And it was interesting, because I wasn't getting like an answer for all the questions I had or the things I was processing. Right. But I like to call it this. I was getting presented with a presence mm-hmm. that was the answer.
Yes.
And that's when I discovered, oh, this is the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
This is and I'm tangibly feeling something I have never felt before. So to go from constant anxiety, mm-hmm. constant like guilt, and not almost, and really, let's just say, living with underlying stress.
Yeah.
We'll call it that.
Yeah.
Living with a kind of an underlying constant tension stress.
Yes.
I was presented with the person of peace
mm.
and it filled my body. Wow. And I was like, what?
Mm.
And I got addicted.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's so good.
This is incredible.
Yes.
And then I realized God was named the Prince of Peace. Mm. Jesus says he himself is our peace. And I started going, oh my gosh, this is what you're talking about. This physical Bible I've read my whole life, or that's been preached at me.
Yeah.
This is actually experiential.
Yes.
But no one ever showed me how to experience what's being talked about.
Yeah.
And I was viewing it through like knowledge. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily my heart, because I wasn't really in tune with my heart yet.
Right.
So it actually took me kind of accessing my heart and my need for a God. And I need for someone to meet me in my pain and heal my pain. Because that was one of the big questions I had, is I just want to be healed. I want someone to heal me. I want to belong somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in those just conversations of consistency, I probably did it at least once a week, got away for a good hour, 2 hours. And just was with God, that's where my development of my belief system,
mm-hmm.
I would even say a bit of an addiction
mm-hmm.
to being in the presence of God, began to form.
Yeah.
And a lot of my questions got answered. I fell in love with God.
Yeah.
I fell in love with Jesus. I was like, I figured it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a real thing that when you are around someone that is so peaceful or joyful all the time, mm-hmm. you become like them and transfers. And it's 100. Just like if you're around someone who's mm-hmm. filled with depression and gossips and bitter, you become like that, mm-hmm. being in both sides. So it's like it when you spend time in the presence and the peace of God, like it rubs off, and then you become like that. You bring up a great point, because and it's segueing into kind of like body stuff, and we're made up of body, soul, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people can sort of like focus like on the spirit. They can be so, oh my gosh, I'm going to like feed my spiritual life and get into my prayer closet and all of that. But then they're not connected to anything that's happening in their soul.
Yeah.
Or they're not connected to anything in their body. So they may have like a strong, like even if they're connected to their soul of their mind, will, and emotions, they might have great intellect, mm-hmm. or they might be very spiritual, but then they've abandoned their body.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know for me, a long time, I voted my body off the island.
Right.
It was like but I would be like, oh, I can like foster and cultivate areas in my spiritual life or in my soul life. And to me, being whole means you're cultivating all areas, like, yeah. you know. And so in your journey, I think that a lot of religion, it's a lot of self-abandonment and a lot of I don't know, like there's a lot of burnout in the church and all of that. So I'd love to, for you to share, like, what's your journey been with that?
Yeah. You know, I think a part of the reason my parents left the mission field was burnout.
Mm.
And we've talked about that. They were fried and they weren't really given the skill set of taking care of the body, the soul, and the spirit.
Yeah.
And the value of that. And I think my fear, even being, I'm a minister now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big tensions early on before God had called me into ministry was, I don't ever want to do that because I don't want to get burned out. It's like,
because the need is so much.
Oh,
the pull.
And I watched it and it affects your family and it's not fun. And so, that was one of my big fears, but something God presented to me is he said, what if there's a new way of doing it? What if I show you that the way, which is what Jesus calls himself, the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh?
Yeah.
The way. He's like, yes, Hannah, I came to give life and life abundant and life to every part of us. I mean, I think it's so cool. It's called hypostatic union. I'm going to throw out a theological term where it means God's, it's the beauty of the unification of his humanity, mm-hmm. but his divinity.
Yeah.
And now that we get to live with God inside of us, which is really, I want to almost rephrase that, like we're actually just in union with God.
Mm-hmm.
We're in union with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit in the same way. Like we're triune, right? Mm-hmm. Spirit, soul, body, and then the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
is triune. So there's, I think I've started to have a belief system that doesn't compartmentalize the three.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to bring them, they are in union. So I need to recognize that and take care of every part of that, you mm-hmm. know? And I think you can find God in doing body stuff. You just kind of have to be aware and invite him into that.
Right.
Right. So it's, like, what did you say? You said something about putting your body...
Oh, I voted it off the
you
island.
You voted it off the
yeah.
island? Survival.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, I think that where, you can be deeply intellectual, or you can do a ton of therapy, or you can be reading the Bible and going to church and prayer meetings and being really spiritual, but your body is also communicating something. Your body, is destroyed.
It's
or like
destroyed.
Your comfort eating.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you know, it's kind of living a bit, there's a dissonance, like you're not living congruent in your identity.
Yeah, I would like aligned.
Yeah, aligned.
Aligned.
Yeah, you're not living in alignment.
Yeah.
So how is that being for you, like learning to come
to live aligned. That's a really great question. I know for me, it's been a good decade journey of learning how to live aligned. And I think one of the things I am most passionate about is this idea of rest, or really let's call it the existence of living in rest and from rest, which is what it says in the Bible is our promise to us. God promised that we would enter into his rest.
Mm.
So if I'm resting in my body, soul, spirit, that means I'm not living in a state of anxiety, or as Jesus would say, where the yoke is heavy mm-hmm. and the burden is heavy.
Mm.
He makes it light and easy.
Mm.
That doesn't mean we're not going to go through hard things. Mm. I think that life is hard.
Mm.
There are very difficult parts of life, but we can approach it knowing that there's victory and overcoming on the other side. So that kind of takes the weight and the hopelessness off and the stress. Let's use like a good term. It takes the stress off, right? Yeah. So some of the things that I have learned to do, I mean, there's different tools that I use that are great disciplines that help me. But I think if I am connected to my heart, at the core of the disciplines, that has been the biggest game changer.
Yeah.
Is the alignment of my mind and my heart.
Yeah.
Because then my will can activate my body in a way that is whole and healing and and I think all parts working together. But if my heart is disconnected, like let's say you're an athlete and you're a sprinter or something and you're so good at your sport. And you're like excellent at it and you've worked those muscles, but you could also be so disconnected from your heart and on the inside feel like trash.
Yeah.
You know?
Even though you're winning medals.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people would say that, you know, like I may look this way, but on the inside, I feel horrible.
Yeah.
What we want is we want to be able to be strong physically, but feel amazing on the inside. And that starts with the heart.
Yeah.
And being so heart conscious. And people can be like, well, I do therapy and I do this and I do that. You know, you can do all the tools, but then you have to bring in the spirit who actually heals the heart.
Yeah.
You have to bring in God.
And the renewal of your mind.
Like absolutely.
You have to, like, I have people be, I'll ask a question of like, what does your heart say? And people are like, I want to go back to the abusive boyfriend. And it's like, yeah, your heart's looking for love and your heart's looking for those. But sometimes we have twisted desires. And so we need to actually, partner with.
Yeah.
Some like with the spirit to kind of come into alignment with something higher.
And get truth or maybe I'm not seeing that right now.
Right.
So I can trust the truth of God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I may not be seeing something correctly.
Yeah.
In the midst of my mess.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that authority of truth can come in. And if I'm just obedient to it, boom.
Yeah.
I can get lined up more quickly in the middle of my mess.
Yeah.
Because he's carrying it or he's guiding me.
Yeah.
You know, rather than me guiding, my pain guiding me.
Right.
Right.
Oh,
I love
gosh.
What you said about the heart. You know, my spiritual mom, she does work on me. She does a lot of inner heart work.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very like attachment based.
Yes.
But loves to lead encounter with God in the middle of it.
Yep.
And she'll say to me, she'll go, and I've heard her talk about this with other clients, is let's use the example of being attracted to someone, right? So she's like, is adult Hannah or is little Hannah attracted to that person?
I love this. Yeah.
Who's attracted?
Yeah.
Is it adult or is this a trauma?
Mm-hmm.
Who's and then you actually use that attraction and you can get breakthrough.
Yeah.
Because I go, I keep getting attracted to this cycle. That's a part of my heart from when I was younger that's speaking, mm-hmm. or maybe it was from yesterday that is speaking that I need to meet with and bring back to myself and to God.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. That's so real. Because I've had to work through that in therapy as well, of like being attracted to the same kind of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because little Ella is always looking for love and is looking to win something.
Yeah.
And we're all looking for healing. Like we're looking for that puzzle piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that your therapist is like, getting you aware of like what that is.
What is that? And I do a lot of, you know, I spend time with the Lord, but with, I call it parts work
yes.
in my heart, right?
Yeah.
So I have enough of a skill set from doing work that, yes, I'll go to someone. But if I have to in my own time and I'm triggered or something's going on in my heart, I'm like, okay, how old is this?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, usually I'll see her in my head or I'll hear a number in my head, like 4 or 5. And I can like see it in my mind's eye and I'm like, oh, there she is. And I go and I try to recreate that safety. Hey, this isn't on you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to come bring you home.
Yep.
Come, I'm so sorry. I haven't been listening to you. You actually have to apologize to that part of your heart.
Yep.
Especially the one that keeps getting attracted to toxic men.
Yeah.
We're talking to somebody out there.
Yeah.
Like, you go, hey, I know you're trying your best, but you don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have to
do something
that.
Better for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love you. Come here.
Mm-hmm.
And I hold her. Like literally I call it my sanctified imagination.
Yeah.
And I'll lead myself like in seeing my little self and holding her. And then I love to take her to Jesus and have her come back into me and be like, okay, adult me is making decisions now.
And I think just for our audience listening, that's what it means to be integrated as a human. That's what identity actually is, where you can, because a lot of people take the scripture of like, forget what is behind, where they actually disassociate from their childhood.
Absolutely.
But wholeness is like, I am taking my whole story and bringing it into reconciliation of the 100%. Finished work of the cross.
Yeah.
Like, and so I love that you gave us that example because it's really powerful.
And there's actually a scripture in Psalm 139 that says, align my heart at the end of it. Search my heart. There's translations. The way it really is it's align these parts of my heart that are disrupted.
Yeah.
Into you.
Yeah.
But I love that you said that. I know a lot of Christians that don't want to do heart work.
Yeah.
Because they're like, my past is in the past. I'm like, well, we all know that. So why are you so afraid of addressing it?
Yeah. Why can't you, like, to me, wholeness and healing is that you can tell a cohesive story.
Absolutely. And the Bible is a mess.
We're all a mess.
We're reading stories of people's messes that God clearly was not afraid to go and talk about people's past because he redeems and restores. Like, if there really is no shame in your past, like, you don't, it's, you can find the healing in being almost able, you don't have to relive trauma. That's not the goal.
No.
But really being able to look at it and be like, wow, I am redeemed.
Yeah. I love our friend Rich Gordon. He says, I'm just getting freer and freer on sharing my whole story.
Right.
And I think that is what actual freedom is. Like,
I agree.
Because you're not like walking around on eggshells being like, I hope someone doesn't know this about my past.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, that's what self-rejection is.
Absolutely.
You know? So
it is self-rejection.
Yeah. I'm like, I hope you don't find out this about me. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to love that part of me, even if it is hard right now, you know? So, oh my gosh, I love that you shared that example. So you like have been, you did a marathon last year, right?
Yeah, I did one in, May.
In May. So I've seen in Reading,
wild.
Seen you running around Reading.
Yes,
training.
Right?
Yeah, I love it. Probably everyone.
Yeah.
There's Hannah.
I had people honking or sending photos like, I saw you.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, it's super inspiring. I remember, because initially I wanted to get you on my podcast before I went to New York for the summer. And because I saw a post that you did on the nervous system and you were talking about emotional rest and it kind of like you were sharing stuff around like your marathon training.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what lessons you're learning from training for. I know you're about to do another one.
I'm doing a half.
Oh, you're doing a half.
Yeah. I'm going to wait a little bit to do another one because it is, the training is so
grueling.
Yeah. It's, I just don't have time right now.
Yeah. Because you're studying as well.
Yeah. I just started grad school. So my capacity, I'm doing what I can to like keep maintaining something, you know, to maintain running, but in time I'll do another one.
Yeah. So what kind of kickstarted you into, okay, I'm going to do a marathon and
You know, I have always loved running and I feel like it was my first kind of, which there is a real natural thing in running where you get that like a serotonin or dopamine hit. Mm-hmm. You get a dopamine hit, you get this like, you can get this euphoria, runner's high. It's so mentally great to disconnect. Mm-hmm. And I did that early on. Actually, I was in therapy. This was my early 20s, in therapy and running.
Mm.
And I would just help me when I was processing through pain and and trauma I had. So I just hadn't run in a long time.
Mm.
And I got a bit of adrenal fatigue. I was meeting with a health coach and she's like, yeah, you're pretty shot. Mm. And this was after my first year of pastoring.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa,
a lot.
Red flag. Oh my gosh, burnout. Oh my gosh. So I was having everything come up. It was like traumas coming up. And then like, yeah. Oh my God, my body's failing me. Oh my gosh, stress. Oh my gosh. Like just so much was coming up. So I knew that that summer before we were going to start another school year, because I work in the ministry school, right? 9 months at a time. I'm like, I need to do some work on myself. So I stopped working out. Actually, I couldn't even work out. To be honest, I would go to a workout and I'd sleep afterwards. I was so shot.
Wow.
My adrenals were so shot.
Yeah.
And then I would even try to work out and I'd cry because I was so tired. I remember feeling, I think that after we'd finished staff training, it was middle May, I took a nap every day for maybe 2 to 3 hours.
Wow.
I just slept.
Your body's like,
it was done.
Done.
And the thing was, I didn't even realize I was, because I didn't quote unquote feel stressed, but your body can hold on to stress.
Yeah.
Even if you don't feel stressed. Mm-hmm. And I was just taking all of it on. And I also think women, this is kind of how we're made. We're receivers. So we do carry the heart and the emotions. And I was just taking everything on.
And as an empath, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just took it all on. And I'm like, okay, we got to figure this out. So I stripped out all working out. I gained a bunch of weight, stripped working out of the equation. And I would really just walk and didn't start bringing weight training back in probably for another 8 months. Then I slowly incorporated weight training.
Yeah.
And just really worked on dialing in some of my nutrition and then really doing heart work.
Yeah.
Really.
It's all connected.
Oh, it was all connected.
You can change your diet.
Because that was really what was getting triggered was my body was responding to stuff I'd never addressed as a kid, which actually makes me grateful because I could look at the job and be like, it's the job's fault.
Right.
I'm like, no, actually, I'm thankful God used that to help bring to
reveal
light.
It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It revealed.
Yes.
Behaviors or the ways I take it on.
Yeah.
And which was rooted in trauma.
Yeah.
So I did some work. And then after slowly integrating, then the next year, some more fitness, more weight training. Okay. We'll run every now and then. And so in my fourth year of pastoring, so you can view it this way. First year of pastoring, crazy, kind of active, get adrenal fatigue, take about a year break and just rest. Then in my third year of pastoring, I started reincorporating weight training. So when I hit my fourth year, I said, Lord, I've always wanted to do a marathon. Mm-hmm. And this is really going to be the tester. This will test if my cortisol levels are fine, if I'm okay. And this is really going to test if I guess I was testing if I was healed. And I wanted to meet a goal.
Yeah.
I really did. I wanted to meet a goal I'd never met before.
Yeah.
And
do something for yourself. Because your job is a lot of output.
Yeah.
You need to like.
And why put my dreams on pause? Like, God, like you are further along. You know, when you're like afraid, I was almost like afraid, like I went through this healing journey. What if it all goes backwards? And
yeah.
I was like, no, you're not where you were.
Right.
You're not. And even my, she's my roommate, but she was helping coach me. Mm. Gab was like, Hannah, you aren't where you were.
Right.
You're not where you were.
Yeah.
You're in a new season. Don't let the fear hold
that's
you back.
That's so good. Sometimes that's all you need to hear.
Yeah.
Like, because that's how we get pulled back into our past.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like.
And she goes, you've grown. You're even better than you were before.
Yeah.
Sometimes our standard of better can like look like a visual or I have my
or like what you look like.
Something.
When you were 20.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it was one of the most powerful things I've ever done. I literally was just telling my team this last week, like, I will never be the same after doing a marathon. Because when you push your body to an extreme where you literally have to grit it out.
Yeah.
Because your body is saying, stop, stop, stop. But you have to keep going.
Mm.
And that kind of grit literally shifted something inside of me, especially after I ran the marathon. Because the max I'd run was a 20 miler.
Mm.
So then you add 6 miles on to that. So that was when I finished that, it was like I just cried. And I honestly thought to myself, I can do anything I put my mind to.
Mm. Yeah.
I have put a box around myself of what I am capable of.
Wow.
Because it does take discipline. You do have to get up early.
Yeah.
You do have to do runs maybe at night when you don't want to. I remember doing a run at like 10 p.m. because I didn't get my run in.
Wow.
And I was running by all these students who were like at the sand volleyball courts outside. And they're like, Hannah, I'm like crying because I just want to be in bed.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the run in. So I have to do it.
Yeah.
So it does something. It teaches you how to do things when you don't want to do things and how comfort based we are.
Yeah.
We love comfort. We love to feel safe. We love to feel comfortable, which is fine.
Mm.
But if you push yourself to the limit.
Yeah.
It internally, your capacity expands. And I think that capacity expansion of doing the marathon helped me make the decision that summer that went, you know what? I'm going to do grad school.
Wow.
I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to put this on hold.
Yeah.
I know I have a full-on job that takes up a lot of my capacity, but my capacity is stretched.
Yeah.
So now I'm not only working, doing grad school, but also I'm going to run a half marathon.
Yeah.
Does that mean I'm waking up early right now? Absolutely. I'm joining the 5 a.m. club.
I'm a 5 a.m. too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Join the 5 a.m. club. Like, you can do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
And that is like a sign of healing. Like,
yes.
Because I know for me, I would have so much like disappointment in myself because I wouldn't be able to achieve certain goals, or I would like make promises to myself and then not do it.
Right.
Because
then you feel like you're a failure.
You're a failure. Yeah. But then once you actually work through the emotional side and get connected with your heart, you're doing it for a different reason as well. Because sometimes I think we can have twisted motivations, like, or we're not aware of like my ego.
Yeah.
This.
Absolutely.
Whereas like you're like, no, this feels really in aligned and I'm doing it for myself.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Which is so powerful.
Oh, yeah. And my biggest advice too is, in whatever goal you're going after, don't do it alone.
Yeah.
Get help.
Yeah.
I like paid, I think, for online amazing coach. I found it was like group coaching. It was like $20 a month. It wasn't bad, but I want, this is a personal investment.
For marathon.
And I have
coaching?
And I have an entire platform of people cheering me on.
Yeah.
And the training's all figured out. And if I had questions or injuries, anything like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I've learned if I have a goal, get the support system and pay the money.
Pay the money.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
It is so worth it. And when you do something hard, it is going to bring up mindset and belief systems inside of you.
Yeah.
But that's why I almost want to encourage people, no, do something hard.
Yeah.
Sit in silence for an hour. Yeah. Do something hard, because it's going to bring up stuff in you that needs to come out.
Yeah.
And needs to be loved.
Yeah. Needs to be loved.
Needs
I love
loved.
That. Yeah. So how would you define, because we're kind of talking about wholeness, really.
Yeah.
So how would you define wholeness? Like, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think it would go back to some of the stuff we've talked about. I really believe wholeness is that holistic body, soul, spirit, being one with God and with yourself.
Yeah.
In right relationship to God and to yourself.
Yeah.
And the core of that is love.
Yeah. Yeah.
The core of that is all love.
Yes.
And I think one of the keys of the core being love is celebration too. So rather than going into a performance mentality or you can do better at this, it's a celebratory mentality.
Mm.
So it's celebrating, I did that even though it was hard, or celebrating at least I tried. There's more of a celebration factor than a hit the hand.
Yeah. And celebration releases oxytocin into your brain, which actually helps your stress levels.
Yes, happiness, nervous system.
Yes. So like, what is your, going into the nervous system, like what have you learned about it? Because I think I always like to hear from people different, because to some people I'll be like, my nervous system was really shot in that moment. And people don't get that I'm like talking about, I'm just really stressed or really anxious or like feeling triggered or whatever.
Yeah.
So what's your journey been with learning your nervous system?
Yeah. Well, let's do a definition. I literally brought it.
Oh, let's do it.
I think most of the world today is having to deal with a dysregulated nervous system.
Yeah.
Which is really the core of that is stress and stressors.
Yeah.
So could even be like your environment you're in or the toxins that we now face nowadays.
Yeah.
But the nervous system is actually made up of two parts, your sympathetic nervous system and your parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. And they're a part of the autonomic. The sympathetic nervous system works to prepare your body for like fight or flight.
Yeah.
And you know, fight or flight isn't necessarily bad. I've also learned cortisol isn't necessarily bad.
Yeah.
I think early on, which, you know, in your body, it's our nerves from our brain. Our nervous system helps us run everything.
Yeah.
They stimulate the hormones that help us run everything from digestion on. Mm-hmm. But what was I saying?
You're saying it's not the stress response is not necessarily wrong.
Bad. No.
Yeah, which I think is so, it's information.
It is. Yeah. It is. Sometimes back in the day when I heard, oh, your cortisol's high, you need to go off coffee. Like when I was in that adrenal phase, I used to be like, cortisol's so bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, actually, cortisol helps me wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
When I see light. The first thing in the morning, boom, cortisol is hitting. Like it's, you actually want to, none of it's good or bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes, cancer is bad, but these hormones in our body aren't good or bad.
Yeah.
We're not trying to fix or change them. We're trying to equalize it and make it healthy.
Yeah.
So it regulates well.
Yes.
But obviously you don't want to live from fight or flight.
Right.
Which is that stress response.
Survival mode.
It is survival mode.
Yeah.
So learning how I'm not a scientist. I do love like listening to Andrew Huberman.
Oh, yeah. He's great. Yeah.
People online that know what they're talking about. So I don't have like all the science facts, but I have learned that regulating my nervous system helps me immensely.
Yeah.
Immensely. What did I say here? I said, your parasympathetic. So your sympathetic works to prepare your body for fight or flight, but your parasympathetic promotes rest and digestion mode, which helps your body to relax and heal. Mm. So if the sympathetic is overactive, the parasympathetic becomes underactive.
Mm-hmm.
So this throws off the balance of the nervous system, and that's what makes you feel like constantly alert all the time.
Yeah.
So when I think about regulating my nervous system and what I've learned in how to do that, especially with running a marathon, because your cortisol is so high from running and your more of your stress hormones are kicking, is I had to make adjustments that added in rest.
Yeah.
So I remember my sleep went up 9 to 10 hours.
Wow.
Like genuinely.
Yeah.
I had to go from 8 to 9 to 10. And I will make adjustments like that. I really want to encourage people, figure out how many hours of sleep you need a night.
Like that's good.
Because if you keep waking up feeling really tired, you may, especially women.
Yeah.
You may need more sleep than you think, especially if you're in a season where your capacity is higher. So right now I may not quote unquote have enough time to sleep more, but it doesn't matter. I'm doing more. So I actually have to sleep more.
Yeah.
So even last night, I think I sat in bed at 8.
Yeah.
And was like winding down.
Yeah.
And fell asleep at 9.
Yeah.
So I could be up.
Yeah.
And get myself going. And so if you don't have good quality sleep, that's going to be kind of, it's kind of like the basis of regulating your nervous system is getting really great sleep, getting morning sunlight in your eyes.
Yeah.
And not surviving off of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna make your digestion terrible anyway.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Downing coffee and you're in this state of stress.
Yeah.
But I've learned my sleep is really key. And to the best of my ability, having a day that is like a Sabbath, where you completely unplug, is really important.
Yeah,
I can maybe, meet for coffee with a friend on a day like that. But I really try because my job, at least, not everyone's job is like this, but mine is people all the time.
Same. Yeah, yeah.
So I have to have an unplug day
and like. Like, no, like, because we go from meeting to meeting to, like, scheduled out. Like, for me, I'm like, I need to not commit to schedule.
Yes.
Not feel like I have to be somewhere.
Exact. Or like always on my phone.
Yeah.
I tried, like right now I'm doing like a good 30-day reset where I'm just not on social media.
Yeah.
Just because my brain needs a break.
Yes.
From that. And my dopamine needs to level out, because when I immediately start grabbing for the phone to like scroll, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
My brain is looking for something that I can find in something else that's healthier.
Yeah, totally.
And my eye strain, and we're all like hunched over now. So
yeah.
I'm like, we're just going to take a break from this for a bit. So I'll make little adjustments based on my capacity and what my season is.
Mm.
Like summer, if I'm chilling, I mean, my nothing's getting that disrupted.
Right.
And I'm getting a lot of vitamin D and I'm outside in the sun.
Yeah.
But I'll make adjustments based on
what
season I'm in. And you almost have to be more disciplined. Well, we know this. The busier you are, the more disciplined you have to be.
Yes.
Like you cannot compromise on that. But I think having a day to reset, even if you've got kids where you're just out having fun and not, you got a family.
Yeah.
Just have a fun day.
Yeah.
Have a day where you're...
Fun is just as much as healing and like vulnerability and processing, you know?
100.
Yeah.
100.
So good.
You get that rest day and sometimes you're like, oh, that's what I needed. I didn't need another session with someone or this or that. I actually just needed to like...
Get out of your head.
And
get out of my head. Get out of your
and get out of
anxiety.
Business.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I love all of this. And I think, well, I love hearing everybody's journey with learning the nervous system or like learning health, because even if you're not like an expert, because I want us to feel like what I'm hearing from you is that you really tuned into yourself. You know yourself.
Yes.
And like, very I think aware. Like we can talk about trying to have self-control, but if you don't know yourself, how can you control yourself?
Yeah.
And so it sounds like you've really gone on that journey. And I think just sort of in closing, I think what you kind of represent is a good, healthy level of what self-love is. Mm. So to you, like some people have like, the problem is we love ourselves too much, or self-love is, you know, self-helpy, or, you know, like all of those kind of things.
All about me.
All about me. But what do you, how would you define self-love?
Yeah, I think self-love is rooted for me in being loved.
Yeah.
I'm being created by my lover, God, which makes me have an ability to love myself.
Yeah.
And then love others.
Yeah.
And if that love isn't funneled out, it was always made to funnel out.
Mm.
So if it doesn't funnel out, then I'd wonder if it was really love. Because love is patient and kind, and that's all an action of the other. But that's also being patient, kind with myself. If you read any scripture at all, 1 Corinthians 13 is where it is at. It's
yes.
a love chapter.
Yes.
And it's beautiful. And
And
stillness is a beautiful way of connecting to that love.
Mm.
Orthodox Church calls it hesychism.
Mm.
And hesychism in Greek means stillness. And they have this prayer that they pray, the hesychistic prayers, and they'll just sit in silence. And I've done this before. It's beautiful every day to just have a moment of stillness. And they believe, you know, his presence is in his name. I believe that too, Jesus. So they go, Jesus, the Son of God, have mercy on me. And they just kind of pray that over and over, like it out of humility. But it's stillness is a beautiful thing to do every day at some point, to connect to yourself, to him.
Yeah.
To just grounding.
Yeah.
And being one with him.
Yeah. Stillness is my favorite.
It is the Christian life, I believe.
Yeah. The equalizing life.
Yes.
You're just kind of, it's like you do a bit of a body scan and you just become aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get out of your triggers and funk, you know?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Sometimes that will be the thing that...
Yeah. I think a lot of people are looking for their circumstances to change to feel that peace, but you can access peace in this very moment.
Yeah. And you can never control circumstances.
No.
So why not get to it internally?
Yeah.
No matter what storm hits.
Yeah.
I live from this, no matter what's going to hit me.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
anyway.
That's a great way to end the podcast.
Wow.
Living from stillness. So
this is
good.
Hesychism, guys. It's amazing.
Hesychism. I love all these big words. I'm learning
thanks.
So much. Oh, well, thank you for coming on
today.
Thank
you for having me. This was so fun to talk to you. You're really great at interviewing.
Oh, thanks. Oh, you have to
you
come back.
You encourage me, and you're brave for starting a podcast. I think it's amazing.
It is vulnerable, but
you're a gift, Ella.
Oh, thanks, my friend. Well, thanks for coming on.
Of course.
Yay.
Yay.
Great. And cut.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.